Welcome to our podcast, where we are offering the best from Temple Solel in Paradise Valley, Arizona. Hear our clergy team of Rabbi John Linder, Rabbi Debbie Steele, and cantorial soloist Todd Herzog share their weekly insights from our Shabbat services and beyond. Temple Solel is a vibrant and engaged Reform community grounded in relationships and deeds, and elevated by Shabbat and Torah. We welcome all who seek a connection to Jewish life, regardless of religious background, race, ethnicity, gender, socioeconomic status, ability, age, sexual orientation, and gender identity. Don't forget to subscribe to get a notification for our next episode. Find more information at www.templesolel.org.
Written word has the amazing ability to let us garner the wisdom of great scholars, even those who are no longer living. In Judaism, we are constantly sifting through and learning from the insights of those who studied our great texts long before us. When we engage in Jewish text study, we sit at a timeless table and enter into a dialogue with rabbis and learned Jews from all ages. All of us peer at the same sacred writings and give our opinions about them. In no other religion I know of is this as common or central a practice as it is in Judaism. So this evening, I would like to share with you some of the comments of a giant in Bible study from our own movement, Rabbi Sheldon Blank, Zichrono Livracha. These remarks are on a short gem in our Bible. Nestled among the shorter prophetic works of the Tanakh is the four-chapter book of Jonah. This book relates so clearly to Yom Kippur's themes that centuries ago it was chosen to be tomorrow afternoon's Haftorah portion. When you hear it then, I hope you will reflect back on these words. So I want to first share with you some of Dr. Blank's poignant teachings about Jonah, and then further discuss them in terms of our life on this day. So first we need to ask, what kind of book is Jonah? Before one opens this book, one might presume that it will contain the writings of a prophet. After all, it resides in the section of the Bible that we call the prophets. We would expect then that it will openly preach the inspired beliefs of this prophet to us, but it does not. Upon learning the contents of the story Jonah, we might mistake it for a record of sacred history. After all, it does give us an account of a man's life. And there are other books in the Bible, such as Chronicles and Kings, which exist to record God's actions through history. But Jonah contains no great battles, no important history-changing events. So what is this book about, and why is it in the Bible? When we consider that this book is about a man who is extremely reluctant to follow God, and also about a great fish of all things, we might be even less sure why this book belongs among the prophets, much less why it should be read during Yom Kippur, our liturgical prime time. Rabbi Blank's starting point is that the book of Jonah is what is known in Judaism as a mashal. That is, it is a story told to illustrate a point or teach a lesson. Let's start at the beginning of the story. As you may remember, God tells Jonah, "Arise and go to Nineveh, that great city, and cry against it, for their wickedness has come before me." However, in the next line, we read that Jonah rose up to flee to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. Who, we might ask, is this chutzpahdik Jonah? The answer is that it doesn't really matter. The book of Jonah is not about a historical person. As Rabbi Blank says, in this story, Jonah ben Amittai is no prophet, not in any narrow sense. He is the people of Israel, entrusted with a prophetic task. He is people of any group called to serve. He is any person. He is every person. He is we. Jonah, in Hebrew, the dove, the one who flits away. Jonah is any of us when we try to escape our calling or run from doing what we know is right. Similarly, we could ask, where is Nineveh and where Tarshish? Nineveh here does not actually refer to the seat of the ruthless Assyrian Empire. Our Nineveh might be right here in Phoenix. Nineveh is wherever we are supposed to be going. Our Ninevehs are those intended destinations that we find too cumbersome, too anxiety-producing, too whatever to want to go to. And what about Tarshish? Whether we recognize it or not, we have all headed to Tarshish before. Tarshish represents any place that is the wrong place, anywhere that is in the opposite direction of where we are supposed to be going. Jonah takes a boat to try to escape from his mission. He goes deep into the belly of the ship and falls asleep. But his mission is following him. God creates a huge storm on the sea, and the good-hearted sailors are eventually forced to throw Jonah overboard. Jonah is swallowed by a great fish in which he resides for 3 long days, time enough to think over his actions. What incredible images, as Rabbi Blank points out, sleeping in the hull of a ship and residing in the belly of the fish, both represent efforts to escape one's duties, to withdraw, to literally sink down away from the chaotic, exhausting, confusing, often frustrating life of one's responsibilities. Jonah wants to escape his God-given assignment at any cost. In fact, he would rather die than face his task. When the storm gets to the point at which the sailors fear that the ship will capsize and they will all die, Jonah instructs them to hurl him into the sea. He could have just said, "Okay, God, I'll go where you want me to," and presumably the storm would have died down. But he prefers death to following God's plan for his life. But then, fortunately, there is the fish. The fish is no whale or any known species of aquatic life. Instead, it symbolizes whatever keeps people on course, whatever prevents us from running away. It could be fate, or conscience, or character, or history, or reflecting on our lives, or God. It is while in the fish that Jonah changes his mind. Having gotten what he asked for and come close to death, his desires change. We read, Jonah prayed to the Lord out of the fish's belly. Jonah utters words of thanks to God for saving his life. And God decides that Jonah deserves a second chance. So God tells the fish to cough up his little captive. And the fish does as requested. Jonah now feels compelled to do God's work, but that does not mean that he is happy about it. He prophesies to the Ninevites that because of their evil ways, God will overthrow their community in 40 days. The Ninevites take heed of their impending doom and view it as a warning. They fast, they pray to God, and they change from their sinful actions. And God is so pleased by their new behavior that Adonai decides not to destroy them. Well, now Jonah is really mad. He resents being made to decree something, namely the Ninevites' destruction, that now will not come to be. Once again, Jonah's life becomes odious to him. He says to God, "Lord, take my life. It is better that I should die than live." Here we have yet another reminder that Jonah is a man who is quick to prefer death to life, who values a life of ease above all else. Jonah is a good reminder to us that doing what is right is not always easy or enjoyable. Jonah does what he is asked to do, and he does not end up saying, "Thanks, God, you were right. I sure feel better now." Instead, he says that exactly what he knew would happen did happen. The Ninevites repented, God was merciful, and there was no destruction. And it was a lot of work for him. The author of Jonah does not claim that doing the right thing always feels good. In fact, Jonah is left at the end without so much as a plant to protect him from the sun. But the message at the end of the story is clear. There was a benefit to Jonah's doing the right thing. The world benefited. Nineveh became a better place because Jonah prophesied to its citizens and they listened. In the end, because of the actions of this one person, the story tells us, 120,000 people were saved from physical and moral destruction. So this brings us to today. If we just change the way we pronounce it, this day of atonement is also the day of at-one-ment. What does it mean for each of our lives to be at one, for our life to have a unified theme? That depends on what we choose as the theme of our life. I believe that almost everyone has picked a mission in life for him or herself. There is something that we live to do, our raison d'etre. We have some goal that in our mind equals a successful existence. Yom Kippur asks us to reconsider first whether we have picked the right life quest. And if our answer is yes, are we pursuing it vigorously enough? What is your life goal? Sometimes people say, just enjoy life, or have fun, or get the most you can out of life. None of these consumer models is acceptable in Judaism, at least not as an ultimate end. Judaism teaches that it is idolatrous to put ourselves at the top of the list of priorities, to say that what is good for us is good, no matter what the consequences for others are, is to set ourselves up as gods. To say if it gets me the lifestyle that I want, then it is okay, is to worship the work of our hands rather than the one true God. It is to be asleep in the cargo hold of the ship and be morally and ethically adrift. So what should be our goal? What should we be telling our kids is the meaning of their lives, their purpose here on earth? Do they have a purpose, or is life just for kicks? No wonder so many people today feel so groundless when life is just about enjoying the moment. The Torah says that God in the Garden of Eden asks Adam, "Ayeka, where are you?" And our sages teach that God has been asking us that question ever since. From time immemorial, this is the question we have had to face. Ayeka, where are you? Where are you in your life? And where are you going? If Judaism presents the question, it also presents the Jewish answer. It is here in Jonah, It can be found in the cumulative wisdom of the ethical commandments of the Torah. And perhaps most explicitly, we will hear it tomorrow in Parshat Nitzavim in Deuteronomy, when God says to listen to God's words, to try to follow God's path for us, and thus to choose a life of blessing. All the ethical and legal commandments in the Torah, in addition to their individual teachings, have this combined message for us. They say, be ethical, try to do the right thing, pursue justice, make that your goal. Or as the book of Jonah instructs us, follow God to Nineveh and try to bring goodness. But truly, it is difficult to go about the business of living life and always keep these lofty goals in mind. There are kids to take to ballet lessons, dinners to be cooked, bills to be paid. But when we do stop to assess our life's progress, when it is Yom Kippur or Shabbat or just a contemplative moment, what yardstick do we hold up to measure our life against? If it is a Jewish yardstick, then at the top it says, making the world a holier, better place with what I do and say. Of course, none of us is perfect, but hopefully on our deathbed, when we take a final look at our lives, we will conclude not just that I had fun, or I finally got the big house or the degree that I wanted, but that I did my best to be a blessing. Really, what could be more meaningful than that? There's a wonderful story about a town whose people were tired of never knowing exactly what the right time was. So they had their clockmaker create a huge clock to reside in the town square. It was put right at eye level where all could see it well. But guess what happened? After a while, the people wearied of constantly adjusting their watches according to the time on the clock. So people began to adjust the clock to match the time on their watches. And soon no one knew what the right time was. So what did they do? They had the clockmaker raise the clock up. Now all could see it and set their timepieces correctly by it. So too, Judaism asks us to set our ideals according to an eternal and exalted plan. Judaism says that our lives have a mission. They have a holy purpose. It is to choose the way of life, justice, and blessing. It is to make sure we go to Nineveh and not to Tarshish. On this holiest of days, may we each think about how we are doing on this mission. Amen.